You're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm speaking with Dr. Paige Figenbaum, Executive Director of the Nevada Preservation Foundation. The organization's 10th annual Home and History Las Vegas Heritage Festival is coming up, proving that Vegas is a lot more than just casinos and entertainment. Paige, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
So what exactly is the Nevada Preservation Foundation?
Yeah, I'll first start off by saying that we are a statewide nonprofit organization that was founded in 2014, and we're really just dedicated to the preservation and revitalization of historic buildings, but also neighborhoods. And what we really try to do is foster awareness and appreciation of these historic sites and neighborhoods through educational initiatives or programs. And we just really want to talk about the past and history, of course, but also the present residents and the people who live here, because they are in totality or collectively the essence of Las Vegas.
Yeah, absolutely. What is the Home and History Las Vegas Heritage Festival all about?
Yeah, so Home and History Las Vegas, we started in 2015, and it first was just a home tour. And the home tour is people are very kind, private homeowners, they're opening up their homes, and people get the ability to walk through these historic homes to learn about, again, the history of the homes, the history of the neighborhoods, but also get to learn about the people who own these homes and what they collectively love about that. And so we started that in 2015, and now we actually grew. We have grown a lot. We have walking tours, bus tours, cocktail galas. This year, we have a keynote speak with Alan Hess. And so now we have over 35 events. And this is our 10th year. And so it is our largest festival. And what we really try to do is have really fun and engaging events that people get the chance to interact and learn about Las Vegas history. And again, the people who really developed and defined Las Vegas.
Yeah, that's great. When you say historic homes, how old are they for the most part?
Oh, they range a lot. We've had previous homes from the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s. And we've all now starting to have conversations about opening historic homes in the 90s, which I know it might be crazy to think about sometimes, but we do have a wide range of historic homes.
Okay, and you've got 35 different events happening over what length of period?
Yeah, so this year, our Home and History Festival is from May 1st through the 4th. So that's a Thursday to a Sunday. And then next year, it's going to be from April 16th through the 19th. We usually try to do from a Thursday to a Sunday.
And what are some of the highlights with those 35 different events? I mean, it sounds like a lot of different things going on.
Yeah, some of the highlights is one of our biggest thing we like to focus on is touring historic neighborhoods. One of our biggest favorites is touring the Scotch 80s historic neighborhood. We have tours of John S. Park. We have tours of McNeil. A lot of our walking tours, again, we really like to focus on the historic neighborhoods and learn about the architectural designs of those neighborhoods and the people who lived there. And another really good highlight is what I mentioned is Alan Hess is going to be our keynote speaker on our Saturday evening event at the Fremont Hotel and Casino. And a fun fact is he was part of our first Home and History Festival. He had another keynote. And so he's kind enough, he's going to come back and he's going to talk about the history of the Fremont Hotel Casino. It was built in 1956 and it was designed by Wayne McAllister. So he's going to talk a little bit about that. He's going to talk about historic preservation in Las Vegas, and he's also going to just recollect what the 10 years of Home and History Las Vegas has been. And I can go on and on. So people really do appreciate, we still have our Vintage Vegas home tour on Sunday, and we have 9 beautiful homes, and we are going to work with and collaborate and partner with the Mesquite Club this year.
Nice. Okay. And are the tours guided or self-guided?
So the walking tours are guided by local volunteers and historians and people who live in these historic neighborhoods. We also have bus tours, and we're partnering with the Henderson Historical Society for a historic Henderson bus tour. And again, that's going to be a guided bus tours as well. And then for the Vintage Vegas Home Tour, that is a self-driving tour where people get the chance to drive on their own time to tour these 9 homes.
Nice. Okay. Now, Vegas is known for tearing down our buildings and building something else in their place. How have some of these historic buildings remained standing for so long when others don't?
Yeah, I think that is a conversation that we constantly have is, like you said, Las Vegas is a city of constant reinvention. And that's what we're really trying to also do with this festival is educate and bring awareness that there are still several historic sites across Las Vegas, and particularly these historic neighborhoods. So that's what we're really trying to focus on for the importance of historic preservation. And again, just foster appreciation for everyone when they take these tours. And by fostering that appreciation, people become more engaged and understanding the importance of preserving these historic neighborhoods and these historic sites across Las Vegas and Southern Nevada.
Okay, so are the different events kind of a la carte where they can pick and choose what they'd like to do?
Yes, if you go to nevadapreservation.org, we have a booking page where you can see all the events that are listed. And usually what we have is we have walking tours in the morning. We have educational programs, which we're partnering with the Clark County Museum on, where people get the chance to go behind the barriers, beyond the plexiglasses and some of their homes that they have at the museum and take a tour of that. And then we have evening events, and then bus tours are kind of sprinkled in between the morning and the afternoon. So people have the opportunity to kind of pick their own adventure. So if they follow our booking page, you can see the many tours that we have listed during the morning, afternoon, and evening.
Oh, that's fantastic. That sounds so exciting. So you did mention the website, but one more time, where can people go to learn more about the Nevada Preservation Foundation in general, first of all, or get tickets for the various events that are part of the 10th annual Home and History Las Vegas Heritage Festival?
Yeah, if you want to learn more about Nevada Preservation Foundation, our monthly programming, and of course our Home and History Festival, just visit nevadapreservation.org and you can learn all about who we are and what we do.
Nice. Okay. So once again, that website is nevadapreservation.org, nevadapreservation.org. That's the website for the Nevada Preservation Foundation. And of course, the 10th annual Home and History Las Vegas Heritage Festival is coming up from May 1st to 4th, Thursday through Sunday. They have over 35 different events and experiences going on, including various types of tours, educational events. They've got the cocktail party happening on Saturday night, and you can find out all about each of them at nevadapreservation.org. And we've been speaking today with Dr. Paige Figenbaum, Executive Director of the Nevada Preservation Foundation. And Paige, I really appreciate you being here, letting us know more about the Nevada Preservation Foundation. It's so important to preserve our history. Las Vegas is an amazing city, and we need to remember and honor where it came from, as well as where it is now and where it might be going in the future. So I really appreciate you sharing with us today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
As Americans, we celebrate all the things that make us different. So what is the thing that connects us? The thing that makes us Americans? It's simple. It's our shared belief that we are Americans. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. That belief that we each can be who we are and live the life we dream, in harmony with one another, in our system, written in the words of the Constitution. Know your Constitution. It's who you are. It's who we are.
Unity. It's an American thing. From AmericanThing.org.
I'm Heather Vail, and you're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Abby Quinn, Chief Community Relations Officer at Help of Southern Nevada. The organization's second annual pickleball tournament's coming up, and they have some other developments underway as well. Abby, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having us.
So first of all, what is Help of Southern Nevada?
Help of Southern Nevada, we are celebrating our 55th year in Southern Nevada. And we began as a referral agency founded by the Junior League of Las Vegas. And since then, we have really gone into, instead of being the referral agency, we're an agency that prevents and ends homelessness, one youth, one family, and one individual at a time. And we take those clients, we break down those barriers of what led them to homelessness or the risk of becoming homeless, and we try and build services around them so that they can become self-sufficient.
Wow, that's great. What is your Shannon West Homeless Youth Center?
So Shannon West Homeless Youth Center is actually one of the programs at Help of Southern Nevada. And we run that program. It serves youth aged 18 to 24 that are at risk of becoming homeless or already homeless living on the street. And Shannon West is their home. It's a three-story, 37,000 square foot residency where they come and they stay. They have a case manager. They have an education and employment coordinator. And really what we're looking to do, again, is work on their mental health or substance abuse disorders. We're looking to get them educated, make sure that they have their high school diplomas or their high set, make sure that they're ready to go out and get employment. And if we can hit and reach them by the time they're 25 and wrap those services around them, the odds of them becoming adult homeless significantly reduces.
Okay. What's the process that these youth would go through in order to live at Shannon West?
Really, there's a lot of different reasons our youth end up there. You can have a youth that maybe made a really bad decision and got into just a little bit of trouble, and they already know how to live on their own, and they just need a place to stay and to get money. You have youth that maybe came out to their families and were immediately kicked out of their home. I've seen youth where their parents, you know, literally drive them up to the front door and kick them out of the car with, you know, just the clothing on their back. You might have youth that aged out of foster care and really were never given the tools to become self-sufficient. And so they find themselves at Shannon West. There's a lot of different reasons they come. We collaborate with a lot of other nonprofits in town. So we get a lot of referrals that way through the Justice Court, through Clark County School District sometimes. And then just youth that are staying there oftentimes will come back to campus with a youth that they knew were homeless. And so we have referrals that way as well.
Okay. And then is there an application process or a criteria that they need to meet?
Really, it's a low barrier shelter. So they have to be homeless or at risk of becoming homeless within our age of 18 to 24, but they do get assessed. It's an assessment that they have to take when they get there. Really, the only youth that we are not able to take are some with some sexual assault convictions and then also pregnant women. But we do have another program at Help of Southern Nevada, our maternal group home, which can house those youth.
Oh, that's amazing. And what is Tropicana Trails?
So Tropicana Trails is a very exciting adventure for Help of Southern Nevada. We're partnering with a development company, and we've received the funding that we need to build a 50-unit apartment complex that is permanent housing on Tropicana and Boulder Highway. And it's something brand new for Help. So all of our other housing is done through what we call scattered sites, so apartments, and we work with landlords. And there's just such a deficit, a huge deficit for low-income housing. We have a lot of our clients that have zero income, low income, they're on a fixed income of maybe $700-$800, and they can't afford an apartment in town. And so our complex, Tropicana Trails, would really focus on those zero to low income homeless individuals. There are going to be studio apartments. We'll have 2 one-bedroom apartments. And our goal is really to create permanent housing in Southern Nevada.
That's awesome. So when is Tropicana Trails being built?
We have secured the financing. Some of that was federal, so a little bit of that is in the air right now, but we are hoping to break ground in July or August. That is our goal. That is our hope. And then it would probably take about 6 to 8 months after that to build.
Why do you think this development is so important for the community?
You need all types of housing to attack or to solve homelessness in our community. And so you need the shelters, you need the temporary housing, but you really need permanent housing, because once people go through programming, let's say a program is 1 to 2 years, we want to find permanent housing. And housing vouchers and Section 8 aren't always that answer. And so they have to go out into the rental market. And the rental market at this point is, it's very impossible for that 0 to 30% AMI group to find housing. And so in order to really keep people off the streets, you have to have permanent supportive housing options.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Now tell us about your second annual pickleball tournament coming up.
So that's going to be fun. That's the fun that we get to have, and the fun way that we get to introduce what Help the Southern Nevada is and what we do. Last year, we had a really successful pickleball tournament, so we're doing it again. This year, we're at Chicken and Pickle, and it's on May 4th. Registration begins at 10:30, and the tournament is from 11 to 2. You do not have to know how to play pickleball to play. We have the different levels. And then we're just going to have a tournament, a competition. So if you have a competitive side, if you like to get out and be active on the weekend, or if you just love pickleball, this is kind of the perfect event. We have Chicken and Pickle is so much fun. I don't know if you've been, but they have some great outside space. And so if you want to come as a spectator, you don't want to play, we do have a $50 spectator ticket as well. And you can enjoy some food and drinks. We're hoping for some beautiful weather and just kind of hang out for a good cause.
Yeah, and raise funds for Help of Southern Nevada.
Exactly. That's always, it always comes back to helping us continue our mission. And so we're able to have some fun events. Pickleball is really popular, and Chicken and Pickle, like I said, has become a really hot spot to go to. So we thought, you know, this is going to be a perfect way to get out and help the Southern Nevada.
Yeah, for sure. Now, besides the few that we talked about, what other programs does Help of Southern Nevada offer?
A lot of what we do, like I said, is through housing programs. So that is for our adults, that's for families. We do have our outreach team. They are called the Homeless Response Outreach Team, and they go out into the tunnels, the encampments. They're that first line of defense of homelessness. So they're out there chatting with people that are in those certain circumstances, bringing them life-saving items such as water. And during the summer, we pass out summer kits. They're also work with the flood district. So when we have inclement weather like flooding, that we're able to get people out of the tunnels, that's a high cause of death for a lot of our unhoused people, is when we have some flooding or some rain. And that team goes out, like I said, and we're just trying to create an olive branch and gain their trust to get them into housing. We have a behavioral health department. Many of our clients have mental health disorders. They have substance abuse disorders. A lot of those were because they were on the streets and the trauma that goes with that. But, you know, others are, it might just be hereditary or something that they have because of what they've been through in their past. So we do have those therapists that are able to help them work through a lot of that. We have a workforce services department. We all know in order to become self-sufficient, you can't just have a job, you know, that pays $10 or $11 an hour. You really need to find some type of a career. So we're able to assist with training opportunities and workshops, get your resume in order. And we have a lot of job fairs that we can send our clients to. We just want to make sure that they're finding something, that there's movement and ways for them to stay self-sufficient.
That's awesome. All right. So where can people find out more information about Help of Southern Nevada, apply for services if they need them, sign up for the second annual pickleball tournament, or even help out in other ways?
The best place to find all of that is our website, which is helpsonv.org. If they have any questions that they can't find on the website, info@helpsonv.org is a great email. That gets answered by two staff every day, and that gets distributed to the right department. We definitely want people to reach out if they're in need of assistance. If someone looks at, you know, some of our events and they want to attend those, they're more than welcome to reach out to that info line. But no matter what, we have someone waiting by ready to help.
Nice. Okay. So once again, that website is helpsonv.org. That stands for Help Southern Nevada, helpsonv.org. You can find out more about what Help of Southern Nevada does in the community. If you're at risk of homelessness or know someone who is, that's where to follow up for services. And of course, the second annual pickleball tournament is coming up, so you can sign up for that there. It's happening on May 4th. Registration starts at 10:30 with the tournament from 11 to 2 at Chicken and Pickle.
I know, so cute.
And again, that website is helpsonv.org. And we've been speaking today with Abby Quinn, Chief Community Relations Officer at Help of Southern Nevada. And Abby, I really appreciate you being here, letting us know more about what the organization does in the community, the difference that you're making for people who are at risk of homelessness, and these new developments that you have, including the Tropicana Trails apartment complex that's going to make so much difference for people, and of course, the Shannon West Homeless Youth Center that you've got going now. And let's not forget the pickleball tournament. It sounds like a really fun way to raise some funds for Help of Southern Nevada. So I really appreciate your time here today. Thank you so much.
I appreciate you. Thank you for listening.
I'm Tumani. When I was younger, I may have did some stupid things. I committed some crimes. I even got shot. But I'm not a criminal.
That's right. I'm Jamal. I work for Youth Advocate Programs. Yeah, I was Tumani's advocate, helping him stay out of jail, stay in the neighborhood, get a job, and work hard to see a better future for himself. If you have a change of mindset, you can have a change of action.
As a little kid, I experienced trauma and I acted out. Made some mistakes, but I'm not a mistake.
No, she's a good student and a great kid. As Jalen's YAP advocate, I'm always here for her. With the Youth Advocate Programs, I was able to connect with Jalen.
YAP is a community-based alternative to youth incarceration, congregate placement, and neighborhood violence. After completing our program, 86% of participants were arrest-free. YAP works.
And now, I'm a YAP advocate, helping kids like me find a better way.
Youth Advocate Programs. Others talk social change. We make it happen. Learn how at yapinc.org.
I'm Heather Vale, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Alex, a Las Vegas student whose team is participating in the 2025 FIRST Championship right now, along with Carrie Karwedsky, Technical Director and Chief Engineer at BAE Systems. Each year, hundreds of thousands of students from around the world take part in the arena-based FIRST Championship STEM and Robotics Competition, which is put on by FIRST, the world's largest STEM nonprofit geared towards youth. Thank you both so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having us.
So Carrie, first of all, what is FIRST?
Yeah, so FIRST stands for the Inspiration and Recognition of Science and Technology. It is a global hands-on robotics program that reaches students of all ages. And my company, BAE Systems, is a proud supporter and has been for the past 25 years.
Nice. And how does the FIRST Championship benefit both students and the planet?
So the program itself benefits everyone. It builds skills within these students that are fantastic. They're here, they're building community, they're learning life skills like confidence and teamwork and resilience. They're learning how to problem solve, they're learning conflict resolution. And all of these are fantastic skills that they're going to need when they go into industry and when they go to actually solve problems out there in the real world. So we're excited that we're able to support these students in all of their learning and encourage them to go into science and technology fields in the future.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So Alex, you're from Las Vegas. What school are you competing with?
Team 97 Tyrolese is based out of the Cimarron Memorial High School.
And what has your experience been like preparing for and taking part in this competition?
I mean, it's super, super exciting, right? We have like a 6-week build season where we're just making the robot, designing, putting it together, you know, doing a bunch of driving practice. And then you arrive at the FIRST Championships and it's just like everything comes together all at once. It's super exciting, you know, to know that like the top teams from all over the world are under one roof and you get to see all of them and like learn from them. And it's just like this really huge like party basically of like meeting so many awesome, awesome people.
Yeah, that's great. So what is your robot like? What's special about it?
Yeah, so we basically are kind of able to do everything that's necessary for this game. You know, we have
a ground pickup, but we can also take pieces from like the human player, and we can, you know, climb, which is like just basically hanging off the ground. Yeah, we're basically able just to do everything, right? Jack of all trades.
Nice. And Carrie, what's the theme this year?
So the theme this year is oceans. The game in particular for this year is called Reefscape. And so it's all about the coral reefs and cleaning up the coral reefs and rebuilding them within the ocean. So their robots are kind of like little submersible vehicles. So
that sounds so cool.
Yeah.
So Alex, where do you think your experience with FIRST will take you after high school?
Yeah, I mean, I really want to go into like the renewable energy field, you know, working maybe with like solar panels or like wind energy technologies. And I think FIRST has like definitely prepared me a lot for this. I mean, you know, here we learn like problem solving skills, like ways to approach engineering challenges, but you also learn a ton of like community skills, right? You learn how to work with a team, you learn how to collaborate, and you learn how to draw inspiration from these other like world-class teams. So I think it's definitely really helping to prepare me for like the future.
That's awesome. Now, Carrie, both of you have talked about all the robots at the competition, but beyond the robots, what is the FIRST competition teaching these students?
Yeah, so FIRST is so much more than just the robots. You know, while these students are building their STEM skills, you know, preparing for the competition and everything, they're also building all these amazing life skills, like teamwork and collaboration. And one of our main tenets is gracious professionalism. So these students are learning to cooperate. It's amazing. All of the, I'll say the critical skills for going into industry that these students are learning from this program. We're just really fortunate as a company to be able to inherit some of these amazing students and all of the talent they bring. They're going to be our future innovators. So we're really excited about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Alex, what advice would you give to other young people who might want to get into STEM fields?
I would say, like, if you're on the edge, just do it. You know, my very first year, I was a freshman. I had absolutely no clue what I was doing, but I just joined and I just found like an awesome, awesome community. And there's really a space for everyone, you know, like I have a friend, you know, she's not really too into like the hands-on part of, you know, getting your hands greasy type of stuff, but she's the lead strategist on her team and she's just doing really, really amazingly. So there's a place for everyone. And if you're on the edge, yeah, definitely just try it. You know, you never know what you'll find.
Yeah, great. And Carrie, what advice would you give to both students and parents who might be interested in the FIRST program?
Yeah, so definitely check out our website, firstinspires.org. You can find information on how to get involved, whether it's on a team or at an event. And I would say just that STEM is for everyone, and this FIRST program is for everyone. So please come join us. There's a role for everybody, whether it's being a mentor and a coach, just being a parent on a team, or like a student actually joining a team, or just being an event volunteer. I've done that for a number of years, and it's a blast. Everybody can find a role on this program.
Nice. Okay. So once again, that website is firstinspires.org, firstinspires.org. That's the website for the nonprofit FIRST. And FIRST puts on the annual FIRST Championship, which is happening right now, which brings students from all around the world to come together and compete in this amazing, huge arena-based robotics competition. I wish I could see it. We're on the radio. We can't really show it, but it sounds fantastic. Alex, good luck in the competition. I hope you do really well and learn a lot along the way. And Carrie, thank you so much for being here and sharing with us more about the program. We've been speaking today with Alex, who's from Las Vegas and competing right now, and Carrie Karwedsky, who's the technical director and chief engineer at BAE Systems. So thank you both so much for your time today.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
We are the NFHS. That stands for the National Federation of State High School Associations. But really, what we stand for, together with the NIAA, are the 48,000 high school sports and performing arts students in Nevada. And so we stand. We stand for the runners, debate team members, and basketball players. We stand for their coaches, officials, and adjudicators. We stand for the drummers, football players, and actors. We stand for the golfers, singers, and swimmers. We stand as the national leader and advocate for these essential activities and all who participate in them and make them possible. because it is our purpose to ensure that high school students get to play, perform, and compete together. To learn more about who we are and what we stand for, visit nfhs.org.
I'm Heather Vail, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me live from the Great Barrier Reef is Natalie Smith, Senior Marine Biologist and Master Reef Guide with GBR Biology, and Mark Olson, CEO of Tourism Tropical North Queensland. A worldwide grassroots campaign and advocacy movement is underway to preserve the Great Barrier Reef, which is one of the seven wonders of the natural world. Thank you both so much for being here today.
Thank you for having us.
So, Natalie, why is it important to recognize the Great Barrier Reef?
So the Great Barrier Reef is the largest living entity in the world. It supports over 9,000 different species, making it one of the most biodiverse ecosystems in the world. You know, it's such a natural or incredible natural treasure, being over 1,400 miles long. So that Vegas to Houston, I believe.
Wow.
And, you know, it's the beating heart of the ocean. It provides so much life, but it's so much more than that to so many people. It's a teacher, a mentor, a provider, a healer. And yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Mark, what efforts are underway to honor the Great Barrier Reef?
Yeah, Heather, everyone's heard of the Great Barrier Reef. They know that it's one of the seven natural wonders, but sometimes we just have to take a moment to remember how big an impact it has on people's lives and how many people have been inspired to take action on climate change and to take action in their own lives because of the Great Barrier Reef. So every year, the United Nations Environment Program gives a Lifetime Achievement Award, and we reckon there's no one better qualified than the Great Barrier Reef. It's the world's largest living entity, as Nat just said. It impacts on millions of people's lives every year, and it inspires the world to take action. So we reckon it would be amazing if the world could support us to support the Great Barrier Reef to be the first non-human to win a Lifetime Achievement Award, the same award won by Sir David Attenborough. His impact is amazing. He loves the Great Barrier Reef. We know your listeners would love to see the Great Barrier Reef. Let's put it up on the pedestal that it deserves to be on. Give it a Lifetime Achievement Award and recognize the contribution that it makes.
Yeah, for sure. I'm on board with that. Sounds awesome.
Yeah, awesome.
Now, Natalie, what are some of the challenges facing the reef?
So the greatest threat to the Great Barrier Reef is climate change. And, you know, with climate change, we get increased disturbances. And some of those disturbances that we see on the reef are heat stress, which can lead to coral bleaching. We see large weather events like tropical cyclones or hurricanes. And we see outbreaks of predators like the crown of thorns starfish. So it's really important. Tourism plays a big role in actually helping us protect the reef. So very lucky. We have marine biologists that get to go to the reef every day. We go to the same site. We know how healthy our site is. We know how well that area bounces back after these disturbances. We know areas that might need a human intervention to help bounce back after these disturbances. But the real cool thing is we're actually able to educate guests that come out with us. And something really we do at GBR Biology is we connect science and culture in active conservation on the reef. We actually have guests be able to come out and get involved in actually attaching live coral fragments to our site assisted recovery project, which is really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds interesting. Now, Mark, how will this initiative to get the Great Barrier Reef a UN Lifetime Achievement Award help preserve the reef at the same time?
Yeah, as Natalie said, like the Great Barrier Reef is massive and it takes a massive effort to look after it. So the Lifetime of Greatness project is about bringing together marine scientists like Nat, our First Nations Australians, our students, our tourism bodies, our governments with one goal. And that is let's get the Great Barrier Reef recognised for its contribution to our lives, not just for being beautiful, not just for being a World Heritage Site, but for what it gives us, the inspiration that it gives every year. And we know that that will put a focus on the reefs around the world. Reefs are the most endangered ecosystem on planet Earth, and we need to be looking after them. The Great Barrier Reef is the best managed reef on Earth, and the science and the scientific community that supports that, with the tourism industry providing the vehicle, the vessel to get people out to do the research, is world-leading. And we want to show the world that there is hope for Great Barrier Reef. There is hope for reefs around the world. So let's recognize 9,000 years the world's youngest reef. She's achieved a lot in a short lifetime. Let's recognize the lifetime of the Great Barrier Reef and inspire the world to take action on climate change.
Yeah, for sure. So how can people get involved in supporting the Lifetime of Greatness initiative or find out more about the Great Barrier Reef?
It's really, really easy. Just jump onto our website, alifetimeofgreatness.com, add your name to support the nomination and learn more about the Great Barrier Reef. Learn about our master reef guides. Learn about our reef guardian schools and the work that our communities are doing. And let's get the Great Barrier Reef that award, the first non-human to win a United Nations Environment Program Lifetime Achievement Award. Let's get global publicity around the work that the world is doing to look after reefs around the world, not only here in Australia, but right around the world. And it's simple. Jump onto A Lifetime of Greatness, add your name, and then tell your friends you're supporting the Great Barrier Reef's nomination. Let's create a global movement and let's make history.
All right. Fantastic. So once again, that website is alifetimeofgreatness.com. alifetimeofgreatness.com. You can support the nomination for the Lifetime Achievement Award for the Great Barrier Reef. First time that a non-human would win the award, but obviously the Great Barrier Reef deserves it. So you can find out more, put your name there, show your support, alifetimeofgreatness.com. And we've been speaking today with Natalie Smith, Senior Marine Biologist and Master Reef Guide with GBR Biology, and also Mark Olson, CEO of Tourism Tropical North Queensland. And I really appreciate you both being here, shedding more light on the Great Barrier Reef, letting us know more about how fantastic it is, and letting us know about this initiative to get it a Lifetime Achievement Award. It's been really inspiring, especially during Earth Month. This is what we should be thinking about. We need to honor our planet. So thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Heather. You have a great day.
Most of us like to be out in the sun. That's why sunscreen and other safety measures are key to protecting your skin from aging and cancer. The FDA recommends using a sunscreen with a sun protection factor, or SPF, of 15 or higher. Also, look for broad spectrum on the label. That means both harmful ultraviolet A and B rays are blocked. UVA rays age the skin, UVB rays burn, and both cause cancer. But the perfect sunscreen doesn't count if you use it wrong. Don't need sunscreen on a cloudy day? Wrong. 80% of UV rays still get through the haze. Only use sunscreen at the beach? Nope. Anytime you're outside, UV rays attack the skin, so you need protection. And you have to reapply sunscreen every 2 hours. Remember, SPF plus broad spectrum equals healthy fun in the sun. Visit www.fda.gov/sunscreen for more information. A message from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration.
A tree can be a warrior, battling global challenges with greater courage. A tree can be a solution, cleaning our air, supporting our communities, and protecting our wildlife. A tree can be noble, growing hope in every corner of the world. That's why now is the time for trees. Millions of trees. Join our planting movement at arborday.org.
I'm Heather Vail, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Kathy Guillermo, Senior Vice President of People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, or PETA. 2 years ago, more than a dozen racehorses died during Triple Crown season. The Kentucky Derby is coming up again, and while the industry has made some important changes, horses are still dying. Kathy, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Now, pretty much everyone has heard of PETA, but what exactly is People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals?
PETA is a national animal rights organization with international affiliates around the world. And we operate under the simple principle that animals are not ours to eat, wear, experiment on, or abuse in any way, or use for entertainment. And we believe every animal is someone, and we expose abuse where we see it. We work to change that, and we try to provide resources for people who want to go completely animal-free in their lives.
That's amazing. Now, why did so many racehorses die 2 years ago?
You know, there were a number of causes for that. The primary one is that horses are given medication to keep them racing when they should be recuperating. And the problem with that is that if they are injured, they are not feeling it because they've had anti-inflammatory drugs or painkillers. They get out on the track, they're not feeling injured, it's not detected, and when they race, a bone fractures, and that leads to euthanasia. So the problem for most of these deaths is medication that needs to be stopped. Horses need to be allowed to recuperate when they're injured, and rest and recovery is crucial, and they shouldn't be racing if they have any chance of an injury.
Yeah, definitely. What's happening in horse racing now?
Well, there have been quite a few changes over the last few years. The public, fortunately, now is just not willing to stand for horses dying for an entertainment or for a sport. And racers have to reckon with this. There is now, for the first time ever, an oversight body, a federal oversight body that is regulating drugs and other issues with horse racing. And tracks are much more sensitive now to what the public thinks than they ever have been in the past. Also, horse racing has shrunk quite a bit. There were many more tracks in the past, much more racing. The number of thoroughbred foals who have been born has been decreased by about half in the last 15 years.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that some of the public is speaking out, but for those who haven't heard of this or didn't know about it, or maybe are just on the fence about whether they should care, why should people be concerned about the conditions for racehorses?
I think because these animals are used by human beings for profit and for sport. And while most people nowadays simply don't go to racetracks, it's not the kind of industry that it was even 10 years ago or 15 years ago. I think people need to be concerned because animals are suffering and animals are dying for just ridiculous reasons, so that somebody can put a $2 bet and hopefully make some money. And this industry is dependent upon public interest. So when the public says this is not something we'll stand for, we won't go to the track if horses are dying, that makes an enormous difference. So we have seen the number of horses who have suffered catastrophic injury and who have been euthanized decrease quite a bit in the last several years.
Okay. Now, you've touched on a few things that are needed to properly care for horses, but what can the racing industry do better on a larger scale?
Well, as I said, they've made some improvements, but I think we still need to see more. First of all, with those medications, they need to eliminate them entirely. If a horse needs medication, the horse shouldn't be running at all. And one way that they can do this is to create central pharmacies. If horses need medication, there's only one place where the medications are, and they're not being dispensed by a number of vets who are working on the track. We'd like to see the track surfaces change to a safer synthetic material, which has been shown to cause fewer deaths on the racetrack. That's really important. There is now portable low-radiation CT scan equipment that can detect injury in horses that might not show up yet. One of those should be on every track. And, you know, we need to see the end of whipping on the racetrack. It has been limited now in the last 5 years, but it needs to be entirely done away with because we shouldn't be abusing horses to make them cooperate for the sport.
Yeah, definitely. What about regulations that need to be put in place from the racing industry regulators?
We would certainly like to see more prosecutions and stiffer consequences for people who violate the rules. For example, the most commonly violated rules is the whipping rule. The jockeys are beating the horses more times than they are allowed. And the penalties for this are relatively small. There's a fine. There may be a short suspension. And if you do it a number of times, the penalties increase. But why is this tolerated even once? Why should anybody be allowed to violate the rule even one time? We would like to see these bad actors tossed right out of horse racing. And the same goes for the trainers who are ultimately responsible for these horses. If a horse has a catastrophic injury and is euthanized, that trainer should be immediately suspended pending investigation. And when they have had more than one of these, they should be banned entirely. These are animals' lives we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. So where can people go for more information or to take action to save racehorses?
They can go to PETA.org, PETA.org, and Kentucky Derby is coming up Saturday. So as long as horses are dying, we suggest people not watch it on TV, not go to the track, and not make a bet on it. Lots of other things to do on that Saturday.
Yeah. So once again, that website is PETA.org, PETA.org stands for People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. PETA.org, you can find out more information about what PETA does and specifically in the horse racing industry. And of course, the Kentucky Derby is coming up next weekend. So perfect timing to think about this. PETA.org is the website. And we've been speaking with Kathy Guillermo, Senior Vice President of People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, or PETA. And Kathy, I really appreciate you being here and shedding more light on this issue that I'm pretty sure a lot of people weren't aware of. And I'm so glad that you've let us know what's happening, the positive changes that are being made, and what needs to be done beyond this. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Heather. I appreciate it.
A dog? I'm not. I was born for a purpose, to bring you hope, to guide you out of darkness, to stand by you as you rediscover life. When past battles cloud your mind, I push them away. You tell me I'm your hero, just as you are mine. You hold me when you're afraid, whisper that I saved you. With me by your side, no challenge is too great, no night too dark. I'm your guide, your companion, your friend, your light. A dog? I'm not. With me, you see the world again.
Discover hope at Dogs, Inc. Visit us at dogsinc.org to learn more.
I'm Heather Vail, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Dr. Marjorie Ann Malbus, an endocrinologist at Christus Trinity Clinic. Hypoparathyroidism is a rare disease, and treatment options have traditionally been limited, but now there's new hope for those who suffer from it. Dr. Malbus, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
So what exactly is hypoparathyroidism?
So hypoparathyroidism, or commonly known as hypopara, is a disorder of PTH, or parathyroid hormone insufficiency. And that's a problem because PTH is the main regulator of calcium and phosphorus balance in the body. So without PTH, the body can't function normally because the calcium is low. By far, the most common cause of this disease is surgery. So typically after neck surgery and usually after thyroid surgery. And that accounts for around 75% of the cases.
And it's rare, but how common is it?
So around 77,000 can be affected with this disease in America.
Okay. What are the symptoms, generally speaking?
It really is varied. It can be mild, such as numbness, burning, tingling in your fingertips, to cramps, to numbness and tingling around your mouth, to life-threatening ones, such as seizure, difficulty breathing, or bronchospasm. And there are also some long-term complications, such as kidney disease, problems with brain fog, and calcium buildup in several different parts of the body.
Okay, a lot of those symptoms sound like they could apply to a lot of different issues. So how is hypopara actually diagnosed?
Great question. So if any patient, anybody you know, have these symptoms, please see your provider or physician so that you can get your calcium level tested and you would know if it's low, and this can be a condition that you may have.
Okay. And you mentioned some symptoms. You mentioned seizures and bronchospasms. What are the major risks that people with the disease should be most aware of?
So because the symptoms can be life-threatening, some patients end up in the hospital or ER quite often. Now, knowing that this disease is commonly happens after thyroid surgery, it is important that we inform patients who are going to have the surgery that this can be something that they may have after surgery. And the goal is to treat and get the calcium level back to a reasonable range. And that usually is through calcium and active vitamin D. Now, it is important to make sure patients are doing well because they are more than their lab values. And some patients don't feel well even on these kinds of therapy.
Okay. And what kind of conditions would lead to having that type of thyroid surgery?
So typically thyroid cancer or a big thyroid goiter, those are the usual common reasons for surgery.
So what are the treatment options for hypopara?
So conventional therapy is taking calcium and active vitamin D, and which can be a lot. I have patients who have to take 10 to 15 tablets per day just to regulate their calcium level. And the problem with this treatment is it really does not address the root cause of the disease, which is insufficient PTH. And there are some patients who are not actively controlled and not doing well on this conventional therapy. And that really is where YORVIPATH comes in. It's the first and only FDA-approved treatment for adults in the U.S. with hypoparathyroidism. It is not known if this is safe in recently diagnosed hypopara or low calcium level to begin with or in children. Now, it comes in ready-to-use, easy daily self-injection that offers a continuous PTH delivery over 24 hours. Now, important, it should not be used in patients who are allergic to the medication or to the components of the medication. Some side effects that has been seen are high calcium or low calcium, possible bone cancer, and also dizziness when standing up. Now, this is really why I'm here, because in collaboration with Ascendis Pharma, we would like to bring awareness not only to this disease, but also to available treatment options for patients who are not actively managed or are not controlled on this conventional therapy that we have.
Okay, so up until now, the symptoms have been treated, but not the cause. And this is the first treatment that actually gets to the root of the issue?
That is correct. So the conventional therapy is replacing calcium and active vitamin D, but really not addressing the PTH insufficiency that patients have. So those who are not controlled on conventional therapy, now our experts recommend offering them PTH therapy instead of conventional therapy.
Okay. So where can people go if they're interested in finding out more?
Yeah. So if you or your family member or anybody you know is living with hypoparathyroidism, please do talk to your doctor to see if this is a good treatment option for you. You can also go to yourvipath.com. I'm going to spell it out, YORVIPATH, for the full safety information. YORVIPATH, yourvipath.com.
Okay, perfect. So once again, that website is yourvipath.com. That's YORVIPATH, yourvipath.com. And you can find out more about this new FDA-approved treatment option for hypoparathyroidism or hypopara. And this is the first one that actually gets to the root of the issue. So talk to your doctor if you have this condition, or you think you might, if you have any of the symptoms that Dr. Malbus mentioned. And we've been speaking today with Dr. Marjorie Ann Malbus. She's an endocrinologist at Christus Trinity Clinic. And Dr. Malbus, I really appreciate you being here talking about this condition. As you mentioned, it's rare, so probably not a lot of people have heard of it, but the symptoms that you mentioned are quite common, and so is that type of surgery. So it's definitely worth keeping an eye on and talking to our physician. So I really appreciate your time here sharing with us. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Heather, and really for giving us the time to bring awareness to this disease also.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
Just a little heads up before something bad happens.
Move your coffee cup away from your computer.
Oh, no, 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 no.
So you can have more control.
Stop. You're texting your boss by mistake.
Uh-oh. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes like managing your weight, getting active, stopping smoking, and eating healthier, you can stop prediabetes before it leads to type 2 diabetes. It's easy to learn your risk. Take the 1-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Warning, the cap is loose on that ketchup.
Ugh. Don't wait. You have the power to change the outcome. Visit doihaveprediabetes.org today. That's doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
I'm Heather Vail with the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and this is your community events calendar for nonprofit initiatives and charity events around the valley. UN El Vino is celebrating its 50th anniversary grand tasting next Friday, May 2nd from 7 to 10 p.m. on the floor of the Thomas and Mack Center. The event provides mentorship and work experience opportunities for UNLV College of Hospitality students, and proceeds support the UNL Vino Scholarship Fund. Get your tickets or find out more at unlvtickets.com. That's unlvtickets.com. The 14th annual Las Vegas Science and Technology Festival, provided by the Las Vegas Natural History Museum in collaboration with the Clark County School District, is happening through next Saturday, May 3rd. The festival includes dozens of free STEM activities around town, finishing up with a giant science and technology expo at the World Market Center. All events are free, but advance registration is required. Register or find out more at scifest.vegas. That's scifest.vegas. Help of Southern Nevada is hosting its second annual pickleball tournament on Sunday, May 4th, with registration at 10:30 a.m. and the tournament from 11 to 2 at Chicken and Pickle, 3381 South Rose Parkway in Henderson. Sign up to play or find out more at helpsonv.org. That stands for Help Southern Nevada, helpsonv.org. Monday's Dark with Mark Chinook is a bi-monthly musical fundraising party at The Space, with each event raising $10,000 for a specific charity in 90 minutes. Upcoming shows include Monday, May 5th at 8 p.m. benefiting Nevada Public Radio, and Monday, May 19th at 8 p.m. benefiting the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Get tickets or find out more details at mondaysdark.com. That's mondaysdark.com. And Three Square's Bag Childhood Hunger Campaign is doubling its impact thanks to matching sponsors through May 31st. For every dollar donated, Three Square can now provide up to 6 wholesome, nutritious meals to Southern Nevada children and families in need. Find out more or make a donation at threesquare.org. That's threesquare.org.